What do you get when three comic and entertainment enthusiasts join together to discuss the topics that interest us all? Something that is truly larger than life. What's on the page?
On the screen.
And on our minds. Is front and center here on Larger Than Life with Dan Totora and co-hosts TJ Yeldon and Brian Yeldon.
Welcome here to Larger Than Life with Dan Tortora on largerthanlifedt.com and on the app largerthanlifedt.podbean.com/mobile. That's largerthanlifedt.podbean.com/mobile. Happy to be sharing with you today my conversation with Larry Thomas, who many of you know as the Soup Nazi that was featured in Seinfeld's TV show. Jerry Seinfeld and Larry David putting things together for Seinfeld, one of the greatest sitcoms ever to be on television. You can watch it in syndication all throughout the day, pretty much. You can find it somewhere, and you can obviously see the Soup Nazi. But he's been so much more than that. So from the Soup Nazi, his first days, how he got started, what he thinks about this, and the stories about his career, the things that you don't see in a movie, you don't see on television, what he thinks about his career, what he thinks about his life, and some of the great moments that he's had. I am elated to have spent the time that I got to spend with Larry Thomas. I hope it's not the last, and I thank him so much for everything. And I now am very, very eager and excited to share this conversation with you.
To get started, I kind of want to go all the way back to the beginning. If you remember your first gig, your first opportunity, and just, you know, what it entailed and what it meant to you.
I kind of have a picture of it here. When I was in college theater in 1979, a friend of mine got an audition for this low-budget horror movie, and he was so nervous about it he couldn't drive. So I said, I'll drive you. So I drove him there. And it was just one of those classic stories. I'm sitting in the waiting room waiting for him, and the director comes out and he goes, what part are you reading for? And I said, oh, I'm not reading for your movie. And he goes, you're not an actor? And I went, well, I'm studying to be an actor. I'm in college theater, but I'm certainly not ready to do a movie. Yeah. And he goes, here, read this, you know. And I read it, and he ends up casting me as, like, the killer in the movie. And that was my very first movie, so it was a classic Hollywood story. It's a terrible movie. It's called Terror on Tour, but you could actually see it on YouTube.
So when you look back to Terror on Tour and how that happened, like you said, a classic Hollywood story, that it's like, oh no, I'm not here for the part, but they're like, just read this, give it an opportunity. Amongst other actors, do you feel like that's something that's commonplace now?
I don't know. You know, everybody's got their own story. Mine was really slow going. I mean, that was an interesting thing. And then I also, right after that, I was doing Singing Telegrams, and I ended up working with this theater group, and we all went out one night for this one actress's birthday, and she got really drunk, and she forced me to do a Singing Telegram for her birthday. And it turned out that there was a producer there from a sitcom at the time, and they needed a Singing Telegram messenger. So I ended up getting all my union cards from that, which for the SAG card for an actor is a very difficult thing to get because it's a closed union, so it's like a catch-22. So I really lucked out there. But then my luck ended because I went by the next 15 years just doing beg, borrow, and steal theater around L.A., you know, no breaks, nothing. And then all of a sudden Seinfeld happened. But there are other stories, like Jenna Elfman was in my acting class. She came into class, you know, going like, I'm not sure if I really want to be an actress. I'm going to try this out. Within 6 months, she had her own TV show. So, you know, everybody's tale is a little different. And that's what my book is all about. I wrote a book called Confessions of a Soup Nazi, an Adventure in Acting and Cooking. So part of the book is my love for cooking. There's about 52 recipes in there. And it's not just the recipes. It's talking about the food, why I cook it that way, other ways you can cook it. And then the other part of the book is all the stories of my acting career and, you know, how it happened and what happened along the way. And, like, you know, the Singing Telegram story is in there. The Terror on Tour story is in there. So it's an education about the life of one of those guys that you've seen, but he isn't in People magazine, you know.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you know, it's a very interesting career to be a journeyman actor and not become a star, you know, just to keep working as a journeyman.
When you look at life as a journeyman, what has it taught you, and what can you say about where it's gotten you at this point?
Not a day goes by in my life now where it isn't about being the soup Nazi. So it's a very different life than the life I had before, but I really appreciate it because I think the one thing that an actor goes through is you want different things, but I think one thing is in common with all actors. You just wish that the whole world could at least know your best thing. Because sometimes your best thing is a piece of Shakespeare you did in somewhere where, you know, 100 people saw it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm lucky. I don't know if the Soup Nazi was my best thing, but one of them without a doubt. And I'm kind of lucky because the whole world knows it. And that's very important to an actor. What else was the question?
Just being a journeyman and just what it's taught you, it's gotten you at this point.
Being a journeyman actor has also taught me a lot of humility. There's an expression that I heard, you'd better find humility before it finds you. And being a journeyman actor is definitely, you know, it's going to knock any bit of ego out of you because, you know, there are a lot of knocks. There's a lot of hard knocks, a lot of rejection. The kind of rejection that I have had as an actor, I not only have not taken anywhere else, but I wouldn't take it from anyone else. I mean, I love women more than life itself, but I still have never taken the crap from a woman that I've taken from my acting career.
Yeah.
It's either take the crap or give it up.
Yeah.
And if you really love it, you don't want to give it up. So, you know, you just continue to get hammered on the head. Even when things are going well, you'll audition for a part and you'll really fall in love with that part while you're working on it, only to not get it and watch someone else's version of it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's taught me a lot of humility. It's taught me to stick with something long enough, it'll eventually pay off. That's another thing.
And in that respect, you know, one of the beliefs that I've had is you find out very quickly if you truly love something or if you think you love something. Is that fair?
Yeah. In fact, one of the things that happens frequently is someone will ask me to give advice to their child or whatever who's becoming an actor, or the kid himself will ask me. And I always go, well, you know, train, work on your craft, don't go out there cold, even if you're really super good looking, still have a good craft. And I said, but if it's hard, ask yourself every year, is there something else I could do that would make me happy? And when the answer is yes, go do it.
Yeah.
You know?
When you look at Seinfeld, which you brought up, being the soup Nazi, being known all over the world for that, bring me into the opportunity with the role, how it all came about, where it's put in front of you, okay, this is the character, and just how you spun it or how you took it, how much direction they gave you with it.
Well, it's an interesting subject, and I think it takes up about 28 pages in my book, the chapter called My Seinfeld Experience. It started with being in an acting class with Jeffrey Tambor, who was on the Larry Sanders Show at the time, and I frankly needed a favor. I was under threat by our acting teacher of being kicked out of class because I hadn't worked in a long time. And so I asked Jeffrey to introduce me to his casting director, which he gladly did because he's such a generous man. And so I had a meeting with Mark Hirschfeld, who also happened to be casting Seinfeld. So that's how I got the call for the audition. And then the call was basically, the character's called the Soup Nazi. We don't have anything on paper for you to look at, but we want a Middle Eastern accent. So I went home and put Lawrence of Arabia in the VHS and worked up an impression of Omar Sharif. You're drifting, Lawrence. Stop drifting. Be warned. And that was my Soup Nazi voice. That was the Middle Eastern accent. And I literally never changed it. I mean, they seemed to like what I was doing. And he's Egyptian, so he's, you know, really Middle Eastern.
Yeah.
And then the other part of it was the Soup Nazi. I had an immediate image, which, you know, says a lot about the powers that be at Seinfeld, is pretty much what I ended up doing all the way through. But my image was just that he's a really impatient, tired food vendor who doesn't want to take any crap from anybody, you know, and he's like had it up to here with rude customers and so forth. And then I also thought of him as a guy that might be dressed in an army uniform.
Yeah.
You know, like he's always in an army uniform. So I went to the audition like that, dressed in the army uniform, and it got a lot of laughs. And then I ended up getting a call back where I got to read for Jerry, Larry, the whole, you know, Spike Ferriston who wrote it, the whole gang. And Jerry actually laughed his head off at the first reading and then asked me to do it again and not be so mean, which was really weird. And it was really hard to do because I saw the character the way I saw the character. So, you know, I did it, tried to do it that way, and he didn't laugh at all. But they cast me anyway, and he came up to me on the set first thing and just said, "You know what, man? Forget about the direction I gave you. You know, and, you know, just do what you did when you came in, man. Somehow the meaner, the funnier." And so I got to pretty much just do what my first instinct was, which is rare that you'll get to railroad all the way through with your own first instinct, because people are always trying to tell you what to do. And and with me, that's really tough. It's probably cost me roles. Not that I'm not good at taking direction, but if I don't agree with it, it's tough. My acting teacher, my late acting teacher, Milton Caselas, once said to me, "Larry, stop thinking that authority exists to keep you from doing what's right." And I go, "But I do think that. It's exactly what I think." So it was a really magical experience. I got to play the character my way. Very little was asked of me in direction. Larry David, you know, as brilliant as he is, just kept me on track. If I changed something myself, you know, he would just watch me and go, "Just remember, keep doing it the way you've been doing it. You know, don't wipe your head with the towel right there. That's a little too much. And just go on, you know, keep it right where it's been." And then after the shoot before the audience, he tweaked a couple of things, I should say, which are like now everybody's favorite thing. The two things he tweaked that we actually shot in front of the audience was, originally when Julia did the Al Pacino thing, I just yelled "No soup for you" at her, and he wanted us to do it again, and he wanted me to go, "Very good, very good, you know what? What? No soup for you." And then the other thing was the Spanish guy that said "por favor." Originally I said "unacceptable," but Larry wanted me to change it to "adios muchacho," which is just his intricate mathematical brilliance with comedy is quite amazing. So all the way to the end, it was just a marvelous experience. It was probably the easiest acting job I've ever had. No, it was I can't think of one that was ever easier than Seinfeld.
Yeah.
It was just easy. And what's happened since with it is just great, you know. So yeah, as you know, it's the easiest job I ever had to do with Seinfeld, and it was a breeze. The only hard part of it at all was leaving that night. And in my book, at the end of the Seinfeld experience, I say that when I took my costume off as directed and walked out those stage doors, little did I realize that the life I had when I walked in those stage doors was gone forever. And it was to happen slowly but surely, but it was to happen, and that life is gone, you know.
When you look at two episodes, I mean, you look at the Soup Nazi, you say is the easiest job you've ever done, and those two episodes, the Soup Nazi episode, the finale episode, what they've given you, what they've brought to you, if you ever thought a job could really become that, where you're asked to do that character twice, and that was more than enough.
Yeah, you know, it's a funny question to think that what this job has done for me, because in the acting world, it's absolutely unheard of to do 6 minutes on a television show and, like, become, you know, a world famous icon or something. But if you also look at my other life, I worked a day job until I was 49, along with my acting.
And what was that job?
I was a bail bondsman.
Oh, nice.
And a court investigator.
Nice.
And but when you look at that world, because being in that job for 15 years and many other jobs, I mean, I've really worked since I was 10 years old. I'm just that type of guy. I never want to be without earning money. But when you look at that world, especially the corporate world, where you can get a job, one job, and you'll end up working there until you retire, you know? So in a way, for a guy that spent a lot of time in that mainstream world, what Seinfeld has done for me isn't a whole lot different than one of those guys that gets a really good job and works it until he retires. It's like, I make almost all my living on the fact that I was on Seinfeld, that I was the Soup Nazi. So it's kind of like that job. It's like the day job that, you know, that I never could stick around long enough to get.
When you talk about the finale of Seinfeld being one big giant party, just bring me into what life was like on that set for you and for everybody else.
Well, one of the funny things was we all showed up on set not knowing what the episode was about, because we weren't allowed to. And there were even parts of our own scene, which was mostly being a witness on the witness stand, that we still didn't know anything about, because all we got was, like, our lines.
Yeah.
So it was like, memorize your lines and come to the set, but we don't want you to know what anybody else's lines are or whatever.
Yeah.
Which was a very funny experience for me, because one of the lines in my scene referred to me as Yev Kassem. But because that was the law, the district attorney,
yeah,
I didn't see it. So when I got to the set, I was with Grace Zabriskie, who played Mrs. Ross, Susan's mom. We were all in unmarked, windowless vans driven into the studio. And I happened to have come in with Grace, and I walked her to her trailer. And all the trailers were in a circle, and I came all the way full circle around back to hers. And she stuck her head out the door, and she goes, what's the matter? And I said, oh, they forgot my trailer. And she goes, what? I went, you know, just an oversight or whatever. And she goes, well, let's go find out. So she took my hand and went over to the first AD, and she goes, did you guys forget Larry's trailer? And the first AD goes, I'm pretty sure we didn't. You know, we haven't forgotten anybody. So we all walked all the way around. There was no Larry Thomas, and there was no Soup Nazi. So she went to find out more, and she came back, and she goes, it's this one.
Yeah.
And it said Yev Kassem on it. And she goes, apparently you have a name now. You know, so Larry David wrote in that name for me, but I didn't know it. That was like that for everybody. We all showed up without really knowing anything, and it was, luckily we all knew our characters. We were, you know, playing repeat characters. And like the first thing we shot was the not in the courtroom, was actually the scenes where we're all doing something in that New England town while they're waiting for the jury to come back, you know? And mine, of course, was serving soup, and Poppy motioned that he, you know, salt and pepper, and so I took his soup away. Well, they never meant for that to have dialogue. It was, you know, there was music over it. And I had not said the line in the almost 3 years since my episode and the finale because I was embarrassed. I just thought it wouldn't come out the same, and I would just sound like a bad water cooler impression of myself. Yeah. You know, so I, even when shows like Inside Edition and Entertainment Tonight interviewed me when I was nominated for an Emmy, they asked me to say it, and I refused, you know? And so that moment comes where I'm taking the bowl away from Poppy, and we did one take like that, and then Larry and Jerry had this really bad habit of standing there next to each other with their arms folded, leaning slightly back and whispering to each other, which was unnerving, you know?
Yeah, thank you.
So at one point, you know, I take the bowl away from Poppy, Andy Ackerman yells, cut, and I look over, and there's Larry and Jerry just, like, whispering to each other and referring to me, looking at me, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, I don't have it anymore. You know, they're going to fire me and call Shalhoub, you know? It's like, but they called me over, and Jerry goes, we think you need to say it out loud. And I went, oh, God, okay. But walking back over there, I was like, living in fear. Oh, now they're going to hear that it's not going to sound anything like it sounded before. And so I do one take the soup away and yell, no soup for you. And I heard a couple of giggles from the crew, you know. Yeah. And then Andy yells, cut, check the gate, you know, okay, that's the one, let's move on. And I got in one take. And then as I'm walking away, Larry David crosses over and walks next to me and he goes, you know what, man? You say it the exact same way you said it 3 years ago. I mean, exactly. And, you know, news to me.
Yeah.
You know, but ever since then, I've been able to say it to anybody that wants to hear it. But I had to have that permission. And so, you know, there was that. And then the next day began 3 days on the set. And that's when it got to be a real party. I know that when I first got there, there were swing makeup vans, trailers set up all over CBS Radford, you know, to do makeup on 50 people more.
Yeah.
And costumers all over the place. And so they sent me to this makeup trailer the first day. And the makeup girl goes, I know, I've heard, don't touch his beard growth. And I went, really? They said that? And she goes, evidently your beard growth is quite well loved around here. So evidently they really liked that look, you know.
Yeah.
And then I got to the set, and I actually found out that an old friend of mine, a childhood friend of mine, who had become a costumer through the years, Jane Kehoe, was my costumer, which was really fun. And then we just started, like, milling around and getting to know each other. You know, I the first day, I think it was, we didn't realize they were going to feed us, which they did. So Brian George, who played Babu, and Ian Abercrombie, the late Ian Abercrombie, who played Mr. Pitt, came up to me and said, you want to go for lunch with us? We're going across the street to Daily Grill. And I said, yeah, sure. So, you know, we're all in our street clothes and everything, but we're walking down Ventura Boulevard, and people are kind of staring at us. So Ian Abercrombie and Brian George and I were walking down Ventura Boulevard, and people are beginning to kind of do second glances and double takes and stuff, but we're just talking, getting to know each other, so nobody really thought anything of it. And then we went into the restaurant, and we ordered our food, and of course, the waiter, you know, I think one of us had soup, and the waiter kind of chuckled, and that occurred to me that, oh, my God. And I looked around me, and people were kind of looking over at us, and I said to the other guys, have you guys been aware of people looking at us? And they're going, yeah. And I said, it's because we're the Soup Nazi, Babu, and Mr. Pitt, and we're all together, and nobody knows what's going on in this finale, so it's not like people understand why we're together.
Yeah.
It's just got to be a really odd sight, you know. So there's a lot of stuff like that that was happening. And then in rehearsal, I remember introducing myself to Jerry Stiller because we both named our sons Ben. And we were talking about that. And then I told him, I said, you know, my favorite movie that you did was The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3. I thought you did a really good, solid acting job in that, standing up to Walter Matthau. And he told me this hilarious story about one of the shots, one of the scenes they did. He said, at the very last minute before he shot it, Walter Matthau goes, let's change lines. I'll say your lines, you say my lines. And he goes, he just threw me for a loop. But so stuff like that, hearing interesting stories from other actors and, yeah, and, you know, other actors that you like their characters, but you've never met them. So that was fun.
Jerry Seinfeld, Larry David, the two minds that they have, and obviously everything that they've done successfully, and being able to work with both of them, just what you can say about the experience of being around people who understand and appreciate comedy the way that they do.
Yeah, well, it was amazing. I mean, you know, first of all, we know Jerry's understanding of the obvious, like things that we've all thought of but we don't make a big deal about. He makes a big deal about it, and it becomes so hilarious, but it's something that's there, you know?
Yeah.
And then Larry David, like, I like to call him the mathematician of comedy, because he is. He's like, down to every minute detail, he knows exactly what's going to work and what's not going to work. He's got an amazing mind for just the details of comedy. And it was nice to be in his hands, because, you know, Larry kind of oversaw everything.
Yeah.
He was sort of the last word on whatever was happening. And so it was just, you know, amazing working with those guys. It really was.
And I've got to ask you to kind of end things here. If you wouldn't mind saying your famous line with my name.
Dan Tortora, no soup for you.